Yes, we tried to free a certain number of them. Can you please ask people who are still in the corridor in the break to join us? It's a great pleasure to co-chair with Stéphane this joint GAC GNSO session. As you may have seen on the list, the agenda is absolutely monstrous. The previous session was already pretty packed, but this one is really, really impressive. I understand the GNSO has a certain number of questions that they would like to raise, and maybe I give the floor to Stéphane first to begin, and we'll deal with them one after the other. Go ahead.
Thank you very much, Bertrand, and thank you, fellow GAC members, Bertrand's fellow GAC members, for having us today. It's always a pleasure to discuss various issues with you. We have prepared a set of questions. Perhaps I should start by saying that, as some of you may know, the GNSO Council Chair, Chuck Gomes, was unable to come, so I, as Vice Chair, am trying to stand in for him, and I will be chairing most of the GNSO-related work that we will be doing this week. So, without further ado, we have some questions that we sent, and I hope you were all recipient of those questions that we sent to the GAC in preparation for this meeting. We prepared three main topics, and as Bertrand just said, the agenda is quite full, so we thought we would approach this by just taking one topic at a time and seeing what time is left if we can't cover everything. And the first topic that we wanted to embark on was the one about new GTLDs. So perhaps the questions have been put up on the Adobe screen on the left here, but if you wish, I can read some of those questions and start the discussion there. And there was some talk when we planned this meeting that we'd do this in French, Bertrand and I, but I see that he's chickened out of that. So we had a few questions on the EOI, obviously, that's the topic of the day, and more generally about the new GTLD implementation details. Let me just read through them very quickly, and I suggest we open the discussion there. Do GAC members have any remaining concerns with respect to geographic and intellectual property protections? That's the first bullet point that we had. The GAC proposed that some additional studies be conducted before new GTLDs are launched. What negative effects, if any, could be foreseen if such studies are not completed before the launch? Third bullet point, the GAC has questioned the desirability of a single fee structure for new GTLDs. How might variable fees affect market entry and the larger internet environment? How would they impact the distribution and recovery of costs? And finally, the GAC has raised a number of concerns about the suitability and timeframe of the EOI model. Does it have specific suggestions as to how the model could be improved or a superior alternative model to suggest? Now, on that last point, I know you've just had this discussion in the previous session that I sat in, so maybe, I don't know, Bertrand, what you think, maybe that's a good place to start.
That's a possibility. However, I think if you participated, or if some of the GNSO members council participated or attended the previous session, we also addressed somewhat the geographic and intellectual property issue. So I think those elements can be probably summarized first, and we can deal a little bit more in detail on the additional studies and the desirability of a single fee. And I think as a matter of reciprocal questions, as you heard in the previous session, I think one of the main elements that emerges now from the understanding of the GAC is the EOI is evolving more and more towards a real opening of this, round. What consequences does it have, and how can we address it? So are there any GAC members who want to highlight some of the elements regarding geographic and intellectual property protection? Yeah, Peter.
Hi, it's Peter from Australia. Just get the ball rolling, I guess. So we certainly appreciate that the protection of geographic names in version 3 is an improvement. But from our point of view, we don't think that all of the GAC's concerns have been addressed, and I guess I'm speaking just for Australia here because I'm not sure that we have consensus on this in the GAC. But Australia is concerned that at the second level, country names are looked to only be protected initially under some sort of sunrise protection. And this, to us, raises concerns that country names will not be protected after that. And we're unclear, I guess, what happens after that period, if countries will, in fact, be required to register geographic names. And whereas previously the GAC had asked that geographic names be reserved for countries at the second level at no cost. So we're a little bit concerned about that aspect. We also have a question, and I think it's a question, when we've thought through a number of the policies, a number of options ourselves, and to be honest, I don't think we have a solution. We're just wondering where it's going to go. And this relates to city names. We note that there's protection for national capitals but not for provincial capitals. Within Australia, we've had a little bit of interest from some of our states about state capital names. For example, Hobart, which is the capital of Tasmania, one of our states, as we understand it, is also the name of, like, has commercial... It's the name of a kitchen manufacturing company, I understand. So we're interested as to where there's such distinct categories of potential conflict between a state capital name and a commercial name, how that might be resolved. Other obvious examples are Bath or... Anyway, we're interested in where that's going as well.
Arnulf, Norway.
Yes, thank you, Chair. As Australia, yes, my name is Arnstorm from Norway. As Australia said, then we haven't sort of really talked too much about this in the GAC this meeting, so I think I'll just have to speak for our country and not necessarily consensus in the GAC at the present time. We still have concerns about the protection of the country and territory names in the current DAG version 3. We still think that the mentioning in the GAC letter to the ICANN board in August last year that those strings should not be allowed in the G space and should be deferred to the CC DLD PDP. Also, regarding other geographical names, we still have concerns. Well, we are okay with allowing, like, for example, city names as DTLDs, but if there will be a requirement for a government non-objection or support, there must be some requirements at the post-delegation. If there then comes a dispute between the government that initially gave that approval and between the registry. Basically, I think we've mentioned this before, but basically, if that registry does not breach the contract with ICANN, but does breach a contract with the initial government, then, of course, ICANN would say, well, it's not our problem, they are not in breach of our contract. Well, you gave the consent when you sent the letter of support, so that's your problem. And, of course, if ICANN does not have that into the registry contract, they will have liability if they break the contract on the government sort of request. So we think it must be some clause or something in the contract with the registry between ICANN sort of make sure that they will be able to accommodate sort of legal dispute in the current relative jurisdiction where that GTLD is set up. I think that summarizes at least our positions on this, on the first issues. Thank you.
Any other comment from the GAC or from the GNSO councillors who want precisions? Maybe if I may, on this, I'd like to make a connection between the geographic topic and the intellectual property. You know, after the presentation for WIPO, we made this sort of distinction saying on trademark, it looks like the top level is getting better, that this the second level, which is causing a problem. The second level, there's the pre-launch and the post-launch, and it's the post-launch and the operations that is mostly the difficult part. I think for geographic names, it's getting a little bit in the same direction, although even at the top level, there's still a concern regarding the numerous way you can describe a country. I mean, the typical example is Holland versus the Netherlands. How are these words taken into account? But likewise, I would guess that there is a big distinction between the top level and the second level, because, of course, it's much easier to monitor the top level because of the numbers as the second level. And likewise, for the second level, it's during the period of the pre-launch and during after. It's, of course, during the after that it is becoming difficult. Maybe there's a way to facilitate the discussion to make distinctions between typical wordings that say, must not this, this is not. No country names at the top level, for instance. This is, you must have an agreement to do. You can, but you must have an agreement to do this. It's for CTTLDs, for instance, or even at the second level domain if there are some specific lists that we want. And then a third category, which would be you may, except if, which is more a question of abuse. And the delegate of Brazil who was there in previous rounds, especially in Sydney, was highlighting the question of prevention of abuse, which can be a post-delegation, like somebody has got a second-level domain name in a TLD that is a geographic name, but is obviously abusing it. What are the mechanisms for redress? So this tripartite distinction may help the further discussion.
Can I ask if any GNSO council members want to make any comments at this stage?
Count Zai Jimil, Councillor for the business constituency, we were the ones that filed a minority report to the STI recommendations. Our concerns remain that, very rightly, after launch, there remains very limited things that can be done to protect trademarks. For instance, the only real remedy you have is the rapid suspension. That's it. In the post-delegation, I think way back in Seoul, the presentation of WIPO and others made it quite clear that the post-delegation wasn't going to cover some of the concerns that were raised right now. And with regard to the trademark clearinghouse...
Due to inactivity in your conference...
Okay. With regard to the trademark clearinghouse, we saw it really more, and this is from the BC perspective, that it was just enabling Sunrise more than anything else because the trademark claims were, again, pre-launch. But it did. The trademark clearinghouse had no impact or effect on post-launch. Once it had been launched, what do you do? How do you? The trademark clearinghouse has nothing to do with that. The ability for the trademark clearinghouse to be able to voluntarily do this and provide ancillary additional services are there, but there's nothing mandatory for them to do, though. However, nonetheless, the BC took the position that although it was putting in a minority report, because something was better than nothing, and wanting the process to move forward, it'd say that, fine, we accept that the trademark clearinghouse is not a rights protection mechanism, but we're moving forward. So the concerns of to the extent of second level and post-launch still, to some extent, remain as far as at least the BC is concerned, although it was, you know, we still wanted to not block the process.
Okay. So Maybe just one one point here, that is to remind GNSO counselors of an important element in the GAC principles on UGTLDs, which is a fundamental distinction between the introduction of the string itself, the delegation of the operation, and the operations once the delegation is being done. I think it's a distinction in three steps or three elements that is very important to understand what are the different challenges that are attached to each. And we must be all careful, in as much as the problems that happen for selecting the string, selecting the applicant, and so on, must occupy us, that the TLDs will continue for 5, 10, 20, 30 years, and that it is the operations that is the part that must be handled as correctly as possible, although we cannot predict everything. Do you want to move to the EOI?
Yeah, I'd love to move to the EOI.
Okay.
Perhaps, Bertrand, you want to call on GAC comments first, and then we can...
Yeah, I think for those who followed the previous discussion, I think I'd like really to throw around the table this notion of, are we really moving towards something that is the actual launch or the first step of the actual launch? And I sense that this is the case. So I think in the GAC, we sense this emerging. Is it something that you sense in the GNSO as well?
Well, to be honest, and speaking in a personal capacity, listening to the previous session, listening to through various conversations, I'm not sure that we all have the same understanding of what the EOI is supposed to do or what the objectives that it's supposed to accomplish. And for us, the way we've come to understand the EOI as it's being presented, there's a couple of areas of advantages for both ICANN and applicants. And I should start by saying that our understanding is that the EOI would not start until there was a fourth version of the DAG, and we have been told that that version of the DAG, which we are to expect for Brussels, would be nearly final. So our understanding is that the EOI would come out after most of the rules have been defined. I think that's an important distinction to make. And our understanding also is that the EOI would help both ICANN to judge how many applicants it is to expect and how it can respond to that volume of applications. That is an unknown quantity today, and that the premise of the EOI there would be that it would help clear that up and gain a better understanding of that, and that it would also help the applicants themselves be able to understand the playing field that they were in and possibly communicate with other players involved in a possible first round, especially in cases where the strings that are being applied for are similar. So we understand, we have been told that those advantages are there in the EOI, and I wanted to make sure that we all had the same kind of base level of understanding there, because if your knowledge of the EOI is more complete than that or different, then the conversation will go off at a different direction.
Any comments from Mark, UK?
Thanks. Yeah, sounds like we've had the same. You've had the same presentation we've had from Karen, and so our understanding inevitably concurs with yours. And I guess an obvious question is if ICANN and staff are so confident that DAG4 is going to be the near final document and we're going to have that in time for Brussels, why are we spending so much time agitating over the expression of interest? I mean, the GAC has a number of issues. The GAC GAC has a number of issues which we are going to articulate in a letter which will be attached to the communique, and that will touch on a number of the points that you've highlighted in your questions in trademark protection and getting the clearinghouse right is a key one. I'm still getting comments in about specific aspects of the clearinghouse, which are quite major. I mean, it may exclude most trademarks in Europe if we understand the rules correctly. So there will be inputs into that in response to the recent documents that we and others are no doubt going to be making. But I guess we are coming to the view that the EOI is prejudging a lot of stuff, but the timeline is weird. Thanks.
Thank you. Go ahead. One, two.
Thank you. Thank you for that. That the last comment was very, I think, from a BC perspective, very relevant. And I can say this with a certain degree of finality, that the comments of the business constituency that will be coming out will be opposing the EOI process. We completely agree with the logic that, in fact, if this is supposed to be a finalized set of rules, why do we have to do an EOI? We just go straight to the application process. It sort of becomes redundant. Secondly, their concerns, from my reading of the document, it says it is still subject to change, and that raises concerns when people apply. And it says, well, we'll take care of them simply because we'll tell you that they will change, and so therefore you can't litigate against us. In light of the XXX ruling, I don't know, because I know it's a different set of circumstances and facts, that raises certain concern, at least in my mind. The other aspect was the fact that confidentiality under the proposed EOI model at the moment would not be there. So if you suggested a string, everybody would know about it, and then there would be this long, possibly, we don't know how long, process where objections could be placed. So would you rather be in the application stage where you know there's a certain limited time for objections? Otherwise, here you've got a de facto unlimited period of objections, or an uncertain period, really. And would certain businesses want to make that disclosure? Some might not. Would certain governments want to make that disclosure? Because certain governments may have conflicts between the regions. I don't want to take specific examples, but I'm sure that there are certain examples that could be brought to the fore where governments may have conflict. And you know, what happens then if it's brought to the fore and then you give one government the opportunity to object for a period of 18, 2 years or whatever, have you? And then, but the last point, irrespective of that, is that if you're going to have a communications process, and I heard bits of the final presentation from staff, if you look at the communications draft plan, it only says from a developing country point of view that there will be global outreach. I haven't seen from that document what that means per se. I mean, at least it's not been presented to us. And I'd made this point in the GNSO meeting. When the IRT was brought out, there was one consultation in London, one in New York, one sort of at the ICANN Sydney, and one in Hong Kong, and that was it. And so my suggestion is that if you really want to go out there, you need to get boots on the ground. You need to do this properly. You cannot just say, well, we notified the telecom regulator of the country, and now it's their responsibility. I think it needs to go a little beyond that. Just the thought. This is just my input there.
I just want to comment to it. Thank you for giving even more information. But I still don't really understand. But if it is the case that the EOI is actually a chance for ICANN to get a view of how much interest we have for new top-level domains, then it's not a pre-launch. Then it's a market analyze. But if it is the case that, because I see in the EOI that we have a few mandatory points actually, which means that it's not a market analysis, which actually ICANN said, Karen and her colleague. So then we go into the next step. If you have a market analysis, we don't have a set of rules really in place. But if it is the case, it's not only a market analysis, it's actually a pre-launch, which is actually, I don't see the difference actually from a real launch. Then the set of rules are going to be important, and that is this gliding from market analysis to this launch or not launch is something I don't understand, and it makes me concerned.
thanks for that. I think one of the important points is timeline, and the points that was raised earlier on by both of you about the timeline and the use of the EOI as we progress towards the first round. If the closer the EOI is to the first round, the more we may question whether the EOI is actually serving some use or not. I'm not saying it is or not, one way or the other, because I'm not sure that there's a GNSO consensus on that. But it's certainly something that we're looking at and asking ourselves the question of whether the EOI, if it, as you said, if the rules are final, then do we need an EOI? And if we need an EOI, then does that mean the rules aren't final enough? I mean, it's a kind of, you know, vicious circle.
Please.
Well, I'm speaking in my personal capacity, not from the GNSO. My name is Jeremy Wagner. I'm from the ISPCP constituency. And I think that EOI that began as a market analysis, or it is now clear that is a pre-launch of the GTLD process as a whole. And well, the king is nude, so we just have to say it. That's all.
Well, let me say one thing. I mean, this is promising for the week. Because if on the first day we seem to be requalifying it in a way that seems to be understood by all actors, then we will have to design it collectively. And it will be easier than if we still consider that on the one hand, it's just to gather the numbers, and the other says, but not at all, it's completely shaping the new GTLD process. So I take some more confidence in the first discussion that took place today. But I would like to raise one... Yeah, please, go ahead, because otherwise I will abuse you.
Good afternoon. My name is Deborah Hughes. I'm with the American Red Cross and part of the non-commercial stakeholders group. And part of what I want to share with the GAC is nonprofit organizations that I've been talking to are very concerned about the EOI for several reasons. First, if it is truly a pre-launch or pre-application process, communication to these nonprofit communities, especially in developing organizations and developing countries, is key. And I echo what Zaid said about a communication plan that is thorough, that is explicit, that is deliberate, so that we are reaching this very important population in the ICANN community. You know, nonprofit organizations rely upon a safe and stable and secure internet and DNS to get critical services to the communities in which they serve. And so certainly nonprofit organizations are very concerned about the EOI process, the fees associated with that, you know, barriers to entry. Of course, any organization that wants to consider a new string must have the finances to be able to sustain it over the long haul, and we understand that. But certainly what we're hoping is that ICANN will consider the importance of this population in the ICANN community and maybe even consider, I know we haven't talked about the fee structure issues, but that's something else that's very near and dear to the hearts of nonprofit organizations, wanting to be able to have the ability to participate if they choose so, and if they don't, that there are sufficient post-delegation processes in place to protect these organizations from fraud and misuse. Thank you.
I think we will need to move to other topics, but I would like just to raise one question that we haven't solved, which is, if the DAC4 being final or quasi-final is a condition for really launching the EOI, whatever the EOI is, who is to decide that it is final or semi-final? As we all know, there are very important interests at stake here. And if there is a possibility for one actor to say, well, I'm sorry, this is not final, then what is the decision? Is the staff or the board saying, I'm sorry, you say it's not final, but it is? And then we get into the problem of, if it's final, it's not an EOI, it's completely launching the process. Or is it going to be a community decision? Does it require, I mean, we've never done that really, if it's a condition, does that mean that the GAC must say, yes, we agree it is final enough to launch the EOI, the GNSO says the same, and all the others? What is the procedure? Because there's a big risk of potential gaming. We all know that. I mean, somebody raises his hand and say, no, it's not final, and it stops the thing. But the question is, according to the distinction I was making earlier on the string, the delegation, and the operation, there was a very interesting session at the ICANN Student Kreis in Barcelona a couple of weeks ago, where Kupritz was there, and one idea was emerging was yellowing parts of the DAG. And here, there is a connection between what the EOI is, especially if it is the first phase of something, and the parts that have to be yellowed. If I make an analogy, if you intend to go from one place to the other and there's a road that has to be built, maybe in some cases you don't need to pave the whole road up to the very end before you start the journey. In this case, maybe there are steps. Maybe the process of launch is dealing successively with the strings, with the delegation, and with the operation part. Maybe what has to be yellowed in the DAG is first all the objections and the procedures that are related to the string, and then you deal with the objections and procedures that are related to the delegate, and then to the problems of trademarks and so on that are related to the operations. The reason why I raise this is because of the catch-22 situation that we seem to always be caught into. And so it's just an idea launch for further discussion. We will not solve this. But for information, as you heard earlier, there is one question pending, and we'd be happy to have a feedback from the GNSO Council on this, is what about having a working group, formal or informal, between now and Brussels, knowing that in any case the EOI will not be launched before Brussels, and there could be conditions about what this group could and should provide by Brussels for it to trigger the functioning of the launch. But so that's a general idea and suggestion, and maybe we can move to other topics.
Can I just say one thing?
Go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. I just just want to thank you for that suggestion, which we'll take back to the GNSO Council. And I just want to say one thing. I think whatever our approach on the EOI is, one of the things that the Council is adamant about is that our Principle A, which asks for new GTLDs to be introduced in a timely and predictable way, that principle still applies to us, and it's a key fundamental part of the process. So whatever happens with this or other discussions, we do feel that further delays or unnecessary delays are not desirable.
So what do you want to do? Because the question of the single fee structure is...
May I suggest perhaps that if everybody is okay with that, we leave the new GTLD subject now, because I see that there's only 20 minutes left.
Yeah.
And maybe we wanted to go to the third subject first. So maybe I can just read. We have two bullet points there. Can GAC members explain the relationship to ICANN in general and to the GAC principles in particular of the ongoing intergovernmental discussions, e.g. in the ITU and the CSTD, concerning enhanced cooperation on globally applicable public policy principles? A mouthful there. And the second point, can GAC members help us to understand the objectives and prospects of the various other proposals that have been advanced in the ITU, some of which could be taken up by its October 2010 plenipotentiary conference, concerning such topics as the provision of registry services, the harmonization and coordination of CCTLD policies, international domain names, the interface between international laws and treaties and internet governance, security, stability, IPv6, dispute resolution, and so on. I think that should occupy us for the next 20 minutes.
Thank you. So I would encourage in that respect GAC members, particularly those who follow also the activities of ITU, the IGF, and the rest, to please contribute. Stefano, other candidates?
Okay.
Stefano.
Stefano Trumpi. I'm following also IGFs and coordinating, trying to coordinate. In my country, people that are going to the ITU meetings and people that are going to Brussels high-level group on internet governance and so on. So concerning the enhanced cooperation, there was a great discussion in the last IGF in Sharm el-Sheikh, and many countries are criticizing IGFs, many, some. Let's say China, Saudi Arabia, the leaders, because the process of the enhanced cooperation has not progressed. So this is something that at least in Europe we can say that the majority at least recognize that enhanced cooperation is there, is already can be verified going to the IGFs. And a few months ago, no, 1 or 2 months ago, the Under Secretary General of IGF sent a letter to the organizations that are supposed to implement the enhanced cooperation. I didn't know anything from ICANN side, but ISOC prepared an answer, 3 pages. And just to say, okay, look, we agree on the principle of enhanced cooperation. The enhanced cooperation is already there. So this is a position as GAC member. This is also my position, but not everyone, of course. I'm not speaking for everyone. Enhanced cooperation was a sort of agreement reached in Tunis at the World Summit, and actually has not been implemented de facto if you read the Tunis agenda document. But in the evolution of the IGFs and waiting for the decision of extending the mandate of the IGFs that should be taken now in the General Assembly, then the discussion about going through CSTD or not. So in the ITU frame, this problem of the enhanced cooperation is moving around. So we have to be careful, every one of us, and to talk with our colleagues that are going to the ITU meetings. Fortunately, someone of those that are present are going in our meetings and also in ITU meetings. And but we need a cooperation in such a direction. And so then there is a lot of movement concerning this next plenipotentiary of ITU elections and things like that. And then we learned about this idea of asking to set up a registry for IP numbers. That are, there are movements in ITU frame that are going in a non-orthodox, let's call like that, ideas concerning the internet, and every one of us has to be very clear of that and interact with the people that are going to the plenipotentiary, because the rule for electing the officers are rules that are completely different to what we know here, and one vote, one state, and so China or U.S. are equal to Slovenia or any other country, so there is a market of votes, something not very pleasant, let's say. I finish here.
Thank you, Stefano. Mark, you wanted to say something, and Thomas afterwards.
Thanks. Just briefly on the CSTD, the Commission for Science and Technology for Development, our principal interaction with that is with regard to the review of the IGF, and we are wanting to ensure the CSTD has a full role in that review because it allows stakeholder participation, brings in civil society and business. So if the course of the review of the IGF circumvents that and goes straight to the Economic and Social Council, ECOSOC, it will not allow that further key opportunity following CHARM IGF for business and other stakeholders to articulate their views. So that's and I go along basically with what Stefano has said about enhanced cooperation. With regard to the ITU, we're constantly seeing a lot of pressure from the ITU to enter the internet governance space. The European view is that that would be beyond its mandate. We don't see a role for the ITU as an intergovernmental organization to lead in key internet governance policy decisions. So the view of governments in Europe is certainly to resist that push from the ITU to move into this whole area. And we're seeing that manifested through, as you've noted there, provision of registry services and wanting to get into the business of allocating domain names. There's an ITU Council working group meeting coming up. And again, the UK and other like-minded states will argue that there doesn't seem to be any justification for that. What is the ITU aiming to achieve? What problem is it trying to solve by setting itself up as an internet registry? It doesn't have the mandate to do it anyway, we don't think. It doesn't have the skills. The view of the UK government and other like-minded governments is to argue that is a completely ill-founded, unjustifiable attempt by the ITU to move into that whole area of activity. So it's a pretty forceful position we're taking. It's partly an educational process, I think, in terms of representatives from governments from other parts of administrations who aren't involved in internet governance. It's a problem we sometimes face within my ministry. It's the same ministry. In other administrations, you've got different parts of government dealing with ITU, IGF, ICANN, and so on. So there's a communication problem there. There's a whole catalogue of things there. I won't pick up on them, but I think you're getting the message, I hope. Thanks.
Thank you. Just to quickly compliment what has been said by the two previous speakers. The CSTD is the focal point of the UN where this year some important decision will be at least prepared. Who will finally decide is the UN General Assembly on the continuation of the IGF. You have to know that the IGF is a part of a package that went along with this notion of process of enhanced cooperation in Tunis. So these two things are interdependent. Both will be discussed at the CSTD. And with regard to how governments will think about the progress in enhanced cooperation, that might have some effects on the IGF as well. And not only the enhanced cooperation process and the IGF are interlinked, also the works of the ITU or the future of the work of ITU and the IGF and ICANN are interlinked in the sense that, for instance, there's a resolution of the last plenipot that there is some role for the ITU in public policy issues regarding to the governance of the internet. This is something that has been accepted, whether you like it or not, by all countries at the last PP. And this is what many countries refer to when they come up with proposals that have been named in the ITU. The IGF is a forum not to take decisions, but to discuss public policy issues related to the governance of the internet. And the GAC is another forum to discuss and help ICANN to take decisions of public policy interest. And depending on how these fora will develop and how this decision in ICANN or will develop, that will have some effects on what some countries who are flexible or who have not made their priorities yet, which processes they prefer. They will probably let themselves be influenced by their experience they make in one constituency when they demand something from another constituency. So these processes are interlinked to some degree. And one of the problems is, as named, that sometimes it's, or many times it's not the same people, and the information within the governments and the influences within the governments are not fully working, so that you have the same countries demanding for different things in different fora, which is a little bit of a problem. Thank you.
Thomas, Netherlands.
Yes, thank you. Well, partially I want to echo some of the things earlier mentioned, specifically what Stefano said about the enhanced cooperation. It's a very vague term. I think you can put everything underneath it. But basically, as you understand it, it's not only restricted to ITU to have enhanced cooperation. I think the things which we're doing here in ICANN, for example, the public policy principles on CCTLDs, you could regard them as something which is being done within the context of enhanced cooperation. And these are basically also, at least to my perception, could be understood as globally applicable public policy principles on this specific case. So I think enhanced cooperation is a very wide term in which we are all partners and we are all, forming this enhanced cooperation. On the other part, the relation between ITU and ICANN, of course, there are many tensions. And I think we have, it leads as a signal to the GNSO. We're picking up these things also within ICANN, within GEC. For example, the discussion on ITU ITU wanting to be an IP address registry is something which we discuss, and we constantly urge our colleagues to have a chat with their ITU colleagues in the case they are not the same people, because for some it's are the same people. So we are very, I think we're very sensitized on this kind of issues. And on the other side, I think we have also to take in mind that ICANN having success in this multi-stakeholder process involving governments and everybody makes ICANN stronger and has maybe makes it less urgent to ITU to step in this arena. So there's a kind of healthy competition in the sense that things which come up in ITU could be a kind of signal for the things which we maybe could do better in ICANN, also better in GEC also, I think, because we're not completely representing all the governments which are in the ITU. Thank you.
Thank you, Thomas. Maybe Fiona and then.
Thank you very much, Bertrand. I think several of my colleagues have answered your question, which is to explain sort of the time frame and how these things work. It's important to keep in mind that the ITU, I think last count was 191 governments. And so it's reflective of the consensus of those governments. And obviously not every government has the same view. And so you've asked us how the process works. My question would be to the GNSO, what are your concerns about this process? Because by your question, I'm assuming you have a concern. So it would be good to understand those. But to the extent you have those concerns, it's really imperative to you all to go back to your respective governments and make sure they're aware of that going into this process.
If I may transition, actually, I would like to thank the GNSO for having raised this topic because actually it is something of concern, of interest for the different actors. And I would echo what Fiona was saying, not only go to your respective national governments, but also if you have the respective GAC members here, it's important to interact. And I would encourage all the community to strengthen the interaction around those topics. But I would also send just a note of caution that as one of the people who have the privilege of following the different processes, ICANN, IGF, and the CSTD, and the ITU in many cases, there is a danger of mutual demonization. I'm fighting inside the ITU a bunch of actors who absolutely do not want to even hear about ICANN or even see the word ICANN mentioned. And it is very important that, on the other hand, people inside the environment of ICANN understand that there's an ecosystem of organizations and that the coming years are going to be like tectonic plates moving and redefining some of the zones of competence. So there's an emulation, there may be competition. None of those actors are illegitimate, and it is very important for you to follow the people who are following those topics and to make sure that you are perfectly informed on all sides of what is happening where. I give you a
thanks. Thanks very much, Bertrand. I want to not to answer your question because I think Bill wants to say a few words, but just to say that thank you for the quality of the answers you've given us, because our first intent was to better understand. And I think your answers were very, very helpful in that regard. Bill?
Hi, I'm Bill Drake from the non-commercial users constituency. Part of, I think, what was motivating our discussions that led to the formation of these questions is simply that we do hear a lot of conversation and we see a lot of discussion at the international level on matters that directly impact on ICANN, or potentially could, and it's hard for some people who are not deeply inside these other processes to know what to make of them and to know which of these points should we be really paying attention to, which really are, I mean, this goes back to Fiona's question. You ask us, you know, what are our concerns? We're wondering what are the concerns of the governments that are raising these points in other forums who are also represented here. It'd be helpful for us to understand from them what they're looking for and what points they want us, if any, to be taking on board within our work in GNSO and in ICANN more generally, because there's historically been a sort of gulf between the dialogues occurring in these two different environments, even though they're on the same issues and the same institutional questions in many respects. And if you take, for example, the question of globally applicable public policy principles, many governments have been advocating this. They say it's an urgent need. We have the GAC principles. The question arises, what else do people intend? When they ask for globally applicable principles, what are they looking for beyond the GAC principles? Does the GNSO have to take into consideration the possibility that there will be an effort to elaborate something beyond what we're already working with? The same things could apply to some of these other questions. So it was simply really to try to elicit some discussion and hear from governments who participate in both environments, and in particular from those who perhaps might support some of these initiatives in other environments or feel that the way they're being dealt with in ICANN is not entirely sufficient, to understand what they're looking for and how we should be thinking about the relevance of that to our own work.
Yeah, Jeremy.
Well, one thing that I think is preoccupies, I think is not only the GNSO, but all the community, is that, I think ITU has some recognized roles, but they are secondary ones, and they should be called to discuss this. Is the same that ICANN will not have a principal role in discussing telecommunications in the world, but we should have also some say in some decisions they will take. So we it's not about demonizing, it's about each one has its role, but one is a principal role and the other is a secondary role. And when it comes to governance of the internet, there is a mechanism. It's what we are doing here for years, and it's working fine. It's a very good tool of enhanced cooperation. So that's I know that governments are not monolithic. At least the great majority are not. This could be worked not only by the governments but and GNSO, but for all the community. It's a kind of a conscience that the mechanism is already here, and I mean here.
Thank you, Jamie. Zahid, I think you wanted to...
I think that participating in the IGF, et cetera, gives you a certain perspective of what's happening in ICANN. I mean, when you do vote, and I think to some extent from a developing country point of view, and I'm not speaking on the BC's behalf at the moment, whatever ICANN does, the way it proceeds with the EOI, for instance, or with the new GTLDs, and how it impacts developing countries, do they feel part of the process? Do they feel disenfranchised by it? Do they feel that this is, in fact, a perception, maybe a perception that, you know, the incumbents are basically making sure that they get the land grab? These are things that we need to avoid, because that will fuel probably discussions within these other organizations. And I think that we just need to keep that, you know, front and center.
Excuse me. Yes. He has raised an important point. The developing countries are not always part of the process they decide, but they are given a lot of prominence in the ITU cycle. And there are things that, as I said, the communication between ICANN and the developing countries, I don't know how strong it is, so it's not as strong as the ITU. And again, the developing countries, we're just embracing the new thing, the new order, the new E. You know, some of us are just some majority of us may not have access to the internet in our houses. We could only see it in the office. So the governance issue that is being discussed here is not done there. Again, ITU is a treaty-making organization. Okay, the government there, when you send your people to ITU, you are sending them for a treaty making. There's really a written treaty. But here is not a treaty making organization. Though the principles are here, the advice are given to the advices that the GAC gives to the board, they are taken into consideration. But are they enforceable? Can government enforce those things? So those are things that seem to make the ITU circle win more of the developing countries than the developed ones, where you know already. We don't know, so we're trying to learn. And I think we can count few of us, even in the other constituencies, only few of us coming into the process and programs of the ICANN. I think as the days and years go by, I know that within short period of time we'll be talking about two resources: the spectrum, which ITU controls, and the IP, which the ICANN or IANA controls, for the communication in the whole world. So there must be a point of meet, a point of handshake, a point of understanding. The synergy is not that. So, you know, the developing countries go more to ITU than here. So, and we understand what ITU sees than what the ICANN communicates. Thank you.
I'm afraid we're getting short on time. Please.
Brazil.
But if I may say just one element, this is the beginning of an interaction on that topic. as far as I'm concerned, and I know, we never had this kind of discussion between the GAC and the GNSO. I think it's a very useful one. We will not close it now, but please continue, and including during the week, do not hesitate to ask the GAC members about that. Please.
Talk. I'll try to be very short on my talk. Well, internet has become a very global concern, I think. When it comes to this convergence of technologies, I think the telecommunications people are very much worried about what is the role of organizations like ITU have on this new world. So it's quite understandable that this discussion goes on inside ITU. On the other hand, ITU is a governmental body, it's a body of governments. And so there is a participation of every government in ITU in an equal standing. Now, what happens is that they feel that ICANN has not given the right answers to this point. And I feel that as GAC becomes stronger inside ICANN and more representatives of countries, I think the right site where each one of these organizations should struggle would be much more clear. So I believe that this problem of ICANN against ITU will become quite livable, or people will just understand which is the role of each one of these organizations as soon as ICANN becomes more and more internationalized. And GAC inside ICANN has representatives of every government in an equal standing. So making GAC a more strong and more clear on how it works and how its representatives are designed here should become a very good, important step towards understanding what is the role of ICANN and the role of ITU. Now, inside ITU, there is a division of positions. There are people who think that ITU should go into internet governance, and the other people who think that internet is an added value thing for telecommunications, and ITU should just take care of infrastructure and of the questions of frequency spectrum. So that would be quite clear for this side that ICANN should take care of IPs, numbers, and DNS. That's what I feel. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Bertrand. I know you want to end the session now that we've run out of time. Before thanking the GAC, I just want to say two things. First of all, I want to apologize to the people that were participating remotely. We had set up remote participation for this session, and in particular, those councillors that did connect from the contracted party's house, as I'm the only representative of that house here, I'm sure they probably wanted to participate in our discussion, and I'm sorry that we were unable to accommodate that. And secondly, I just want to say, following on from what you were saying, that I think one of the things that obviously in the GNSO we're very, very emphatic about is the multi-stakeholder model. We live it every day, so it's something that we feel very passionate about, and it's something that's very important to us. Do we have any more time, or?
I'd like to make just one.
Okay. In that case, I'll just say thank you very much once again to the GAC. We always greatly enjoy these discussions. I hope they can continue in the future, and I hope we are able to give you some interesting points and questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, too. I just wanted to add one final element to the second part of the discussion, which I think is a very good beginning. for the interaction. Just one element, in as much as I was saying there should be no demonization, basically for all governments there's an encouragement to participate in both, or even in multiple, because that means IGF as well. Internet governance is a topic that has changed since the World Summit on the Information Society, which was basically a battlefield between very opposed positions. As Stefan has said, the notion of multi-stakeholder governance is emerging, and we are all trying informally to achieve that. And I just want to send a very simple message. None of the existing organizations dealing with internet governance is the ultimate multi-stakeholder model achieved. ICANN has been a pioneer of this approach. One of the challenges that we're addressing is, among others, the role of governments in this system. Likewise, ITU, which is an intergovernmental organization, has a challenge of allowing other types of actors to participate in the activities that it wants to conduct. And I often say that UNESCO, likewise, whereas ITU has the problem with civil society actors, UNESCO, in the same respect, has a lot of problems with companies. They have civil society and governments, but they don't have companies. So if we keep in mind that internet governance has a role for all the organizations, and there's amply enough work to do to occupy all of us in all the organizations with their respective functions, we all strive to achieve a better model of multi-stakeholder interaction. And in the case of ICANN, the review and the AOC review that unfortunately we didn't have the opportunity to delve into, but there was not a lot of substance actually to discuss at that stage, is going to be a very important element in this discussion. With that, I thank you very, very much for having joined this session, and looking forward to further interactions during the week and afterwards. Thank you.